When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
So welcome back to another episode of Millennial Money. I am Graham. We got Andre Jick and this guy.
Mr. Jeremy Financial Education.
Jeremy? Yeah, I'm on the show. I'm like the bench warmer of the team. I'm like Michael Jordan and LeBron James of personal finance here, and I'm just here to collect a paycheck.
Yeah, right. Actually, so I don't Graham, get fined. Yeah. I have a question for you.
Sure.
It was 4th of July.
It was.
You went to Canada.
I went to Canada for 4th of July.
That was so out of the ordinary.
Yeah,
Graham.
You know what? It was the only weekend where I had four days, actually, where I was so ahead on videos that I could actually take time to see family in Canada.
Wow.
For like 4 years.
You didn't tell me anything about this.
Oh, it was the last minute. I bought the ticket on like Wednesday, and I flew out, when was it, Thursday night.
But did you use points?
No, I didn't.
How could you?
No, I'm saving up my, it sounds so stupid, I'm saving up my Amex points. Okay. I'm close to 1,000,000 points. I want to get a screenshot of it saying 1,000,000 Amex points.
Wow.
So cool. Like, I'm not using the points.
That's
now,
really cool. Yeah.
How was the travel experience? Because everybody's been talking about travel is a nightmare right now. Planes,
cancellations.
You got to sleep at the airport,
So I am going to like a small town. It's called London, Ontario, Canada. And technically to go there, you fly into Toronto and then you have to wait and take another small plane. I've seen nothing but delays between that little small plane there. So it was actually easier for me to fly into Toronto and then get a 2-hour ride to London, Ontario.
Wow.
That's
cool. But both flights were delayed and both were full flights.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Andre, ask him where he got the ride.
Where'd you get the ride?
Instagram.
Oh, Instagram.
Yeah. So the first ride was compliments of Jeff Wibo. He's someone who I've done videos with him actually in the past. When I first started making YouTube videos, he's a real estate agent out in London, Ontario.
He picked you up from the airport.
He had his guy. He has an assistant who drove 2 hours to Toronto to pick me up, to drive me 2 hours back at 7 o'clock in the morning.
Whoa.
So that's Jeff Wibo.
Wait, when you arrived, were they like, Graham Stephan?
No. I was shocked. The guy's just parked right out front.
Okay.
It was so nice. Cool. And the guy was fantastic. So big thank you to Jeff Wibo. But then going back to Toronto, I just posted on Instagram. And this is what I do. I post on Instagram and I say like, hey, just like looking for a ride to Toronto this day. Who's free? And within like 15 minutes, I probably had 10 to 20 requests of people saying like, I'm free, I'll do it. And pretty quickly, I found somebody, Dimitri, who just gave me a ride.
How do you pick?
I usually go by like who's first and who has a public profile. Because if you have a private profile and I can't at least like scope you out, it's a no.
Right.
But if it's a public profile, you look interesting, you have like enough pictures there to see like, you know, you have friends. And Dimitri passed the test. You know what? We could even put Dimitri's Instagram. He's not going to ask
That's
for that. Cool. But such a cool guy. And he's a mortgage guy in Canada, believe it or not. And drove me all the way to Toronto, just hung out all day.
Cool.
Knock on wood, I've never had a single bad experience.
Did he tell you any anecdotal stories about the real estate there?
He says it's busy as ever. I mean, I was asking him if the mortgage industry is beginning to slow down, like maybe interest rates are getting to a price where, you know, people are scaling back. He's like, at least from his experience, was no. They're still going strong in Canada. But they have a slightly different mortgage system than we have. So in Canada, you cannot lock in on a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage. You could lock in, I believe it's 10 years is the shortest term, and then they can fluctuate after that term. Now, he is telling me something slightly worrisome for Canada, at least, is that some people are getting 1 to 3 year mortgages that are basically just the 1 to 3 year ARM loans, which means that after that term, the interest rate could fluctuate. A little worrisome to me that some people are getting those loans because they can't afford a higher interest rate for 10 years. So they'll get like the 1 to 3.
Now, banks I've never heard of 1 to 3.
Yeah. I've never heard of that either.
That's what he's telling me. Now, I'm not Canadian, so I don't know exactly what their system is, but that's what he explained to me. And they do what's called stress testing to make sure that they could afford a higher payment. I don't know to what degree or how much interest rates have to go up for that to be an issue. Mm. But I do worry, 10 years from now, if prices are lower and the payments are way higher and people can't afford that, what happens?
But wow. So do you happen to get the, like, it's the loan to income ratio for the market?
Debt to income.
To income. Because like the Toronto market, I remember, was like 14 or something ridiculous.
I don't know. Okay. I don't know any specifics. I wish I did.
Because I'm curious, like, how do banks like lend that much money to people? It's like 14 times their annual income. Like, how does that make sense?
Yeah, I know. And then you got like Shanghai, China. I think it's something like 30.
Yeah.
Now, what also is interesting is that Canada banned foreign investors from buying properties. I think it's a 30% tax that they put on rental properties bought by foreign investors.
Right? I know that was a big problem in Vancouver specifically.
Yeah.
Right. So that's one of the reasons I think you cited last time where you said that doesn't fix real estate prices, because even though they banned international buyers, that still didn't fix their real estate prices.
Yeah. Well, again, I'm getting all of this anecdotal advice through Dimitri. So, I don't know to what extent this is accurate, but he's saying that for a lot of people overseas, they'll still pay the 30%.
Oh, wow.
So it's not discouraging people as much as maybe it was intended.
Right.
What Dimitri says. Yeah. He delivered you all the way to Toronto.
He drove 2 hours to Toronto and 2 hours back to London, Ontario. Dimitri gets my trust.
All right. And then Alex picked you up.
Yeah, and then Alex picked me up here. Yeah.
Now, I want to know, Graham, what's your opinion? Do you think there's ever going to be in the United States a 40-year mortgage? And if there is, what does that do for real estate?
I believe that's an option. For some people right now that they're able to refinance. I believe so. Okay. Either it was a proposal. I'm not sure. I think there were some qualifications. I sound like an idiot here just guessing. To your point, I would not be surprised if in the future they offer a 40-year mortgage.
And that becomes like the standard.
Right. Do you think values would skyrocket if that was the case?
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Doesn't Sweden do that?
I don't know about Sweden, but I'm sure somebody does it in Europe, a 40-year mortgage.
Again, it's like I'm talking like I think there's another country who offers that, and people just perpetually roll over the loan.
If there was a 40-year offered, it would skyrocket.
Oh, totally.
Wow. It's kind of like going into a dealership and the guy always asks you like, so how much do you want to pay per month? And you're like, I can't afford more than $300 a month. And they're like, great, I got you this deal. You're going to pay $300 a month for the next 140 months.
Yes.
You're like, okay.
I know. It used to be customary where if you got an auto loan, it was 3 to maybe 5 years, and now they'll push way past 5.
Yeah,
it takes it
144 month loans.
Exactly, it's insane.
Yeah, and as a person that wants a car, it's like.
And here's the thing: I would take the 40-year. I would get thinking 40 years. Oh, for sure. Come on, I mean, why not take it? As long as you're smart with it, as long as you're not like extending yourself and getting a 40-year loan, but like assuming you could leverage your money at a low enough rate, it makes sense.
Every property you'd want to refi for a 40-year.
Yeah, imagine for rentals, the cash flow.
Would you
rental
refi?
Properties depends on what the interest rate is. Right now, I'm locked in on low rates. So if it goes from like 3 to 7%, no.
Right.
But if it's like 3 to 4, and it goes from a 30 to a 40-year loan, it gets reset probably.
Because that would lower the monthly payment substantially.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's why one of the reasons I'm like, if my house doesn't move, the one I'm trying to sell, I'm like, that's fine. I'll just keep it for a rental. The 40 years probably coming at some point in time.
Yeah.
Because they're going to do whatever it takes to save the market.
Right.
If that means we got to start doing 40-year mortgages, we'll do it.
You remember the Fannie Mae loans? They increased the value. Was it in the U.S. in total or was it in Nevada specifically? They increased the maximum value that they would loan
to. But that's based on average home prices along with inflation.
Yeah.
So it raises every year.
Right.
Usually it's not a huge raise because home prices won't go up 20, 30%. But This last year they did. And so some areas, yeah, you could get an FHA loan for up to like $1 million in some cities in Los Angeles where that's the going price.
Wow.
Right. Oh, did you guys receive a letter in the mail recently by chance where it was asking you to cap your interest rate for property taxes?
Yeah, did you do that, Jeremy?
My wife probably did. Yeah.
I probably did. Yeah, so you'll know if you did it this year.
I mean, most of the letters I get from the IRS, but do you guys have no one else to write to?
What is it, man? This time? Dear Jeremy. Yeah. It's just a handwritten letter.
Money.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
Yours truly.
Yeah. No, but yeah, what happened? The property taxes, I don't know. My wife handled it.
Yeah, I'm trying to understand it too, because it was basically to lock in your interest rates so they don't increase your rates beyond, was it 3%, 3.5%?
Okay, yeah.
So that's for your primary residence.
Yeah, so in Las Vegas, the way it works is that when you buy a primary residence, that property tax increase or the appraised value of the property is capped at 3%. Okay. So if you buy a home for $100,000 the next year, the property tax is going to be based off $103,000. Mm. Now, if you have a rental property, that could go all the way up to 10% a year, just depending on inflation and property values. Well, this year, property values went up by a lot. Inflation is up by a lot. And instead of the default being 3% unless you specify otherwise. Now it's your property's going up in value by 8-10% unless you say that you live there. And so now the default is we're going to raise the property taxes for everybody unless you specify otherwise. Now, I think this
only
is
for one house. That's a primary residence.
It is for a primary residence. So in order to get around that, you have to send in a mailer that looks like spam. It looks like something you would throw away, and I've thrown it away, where you have to like fill it out, this little card, check a box, and then send it back.
Oh,
nobody's doing that.
My wife did it online. I know
you can't
do
it online.
She said she did it online.
Alex, can you do it online?
Yes, you can. I did it online.
Wait, what do you mean you did it? You applied for me? Why did I have to sign something?
I did it online.
How did I have to sign something?
Because I sent it back to them digitally.
No, but it's not a form that you sign. I think...
Jeremy's, it's a form that you signed. I emailed the... Listen, this is what happened.
Out,
Let
Jeremy.
Me give you guys yeah, the real... Right. Graham's talking over here like, oh yeah, I got the card and I sent it in. No. Let me tell you the real story. Graham is like, oh, Alex, can you look into this? Because I think we didn't get this card. And then I contacted, what is it, the assessors or whatever? Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh yeah, they sent me the form. They're like, just sign this, return it electronically, and you're done. They're like, we'll also send you a mail copy just as a backup. But if you do, they're like, assuming I'm a boomer and I can't use a computer, basically. So they're like, as long as you do it electronically, it's fine. If you want to mail it in, you could do that. So yes, you can do it electronically.
So I should clarify, like there's a website where you just type in your property address, your name, you click a box and click submit. It's a form, it's a PDF that you have to print out and then scan it back to them.
Right.
That's so you can do it online. Okay.
So you can do it with a DocuSign.
Kind of. Do they? No, they don't allow DocuSign. Wet signatures only on
They it. Allow DocuSign.
No, wet signatures only. Was it wet signatures only?
It wet was. Signatures, what does that even mean?
Wet signatures means you actually have to physically sign it.
Stamping it with wax, man. That's what we want.
Wow. All
right, I'm just going to stop talking this episode. Right, I'm done.
Yeah.
Making up so much stuff.
Have you guys ever thought about the middle class before?
How do they do it on $60,000 a year, Jeremy? Family of three.
Every episode it goes up $100,000 a year. I don't understand.
$600,000. No, so good news for the middle class. Commodities are tanking.
Okay, so you said oil is back under $100.
Yeah, oil's back under
$100. Okay, where was it at the peak?
Oh gosh. It was 125, I think.
Yeah,
close
like
to 130, I think, at the peak.
Yeah.
And that was about a month ago.
Yeah.
So oil's starting to come down. So it's gonna take a while before it gets to the gas pump, unfortunately, because that's the thing. People will look at the oil price and like, tomorrow, gas price has to be cheaper. It doesn't work like that. It's going to take a while. But not just that. All the commodities have been tanking, like oats, for instance, wheat, for instance, lumber, like all the commodities. If you pull up 3 months, 6 months on all these commodities, they are down dramatically, like 20, 30, 40 plus percent.
Yeah, like Bitcoin.
Oh,
yeah. That's a commodity.
That's true. Yeah. Well, Mr. Gary? Gary over at the SEC, he wants to treat it as a commodity.
Yeah,
right?
Well, it should be. Yeah.
Like, which it should be. Okay. So you agree with that?
Yeah.
Okay. Does
not
the Bitcoin community...
Sorry.
Does the Bitcoin community in general want that to be a commodity?
I think that's the case. Yeah. I don't think they want it to be a security. That's the thing we want to avoid.
Don't they want it to be a currency treated more like that?
Not necessarily. Yeah. I think if anything, they want like a hybrid custom model where it's like it's, you know, it's its own thing because it has parts currency. It has parts commodity. Yeah. It has different parts to it, but definitely not a security.
Okay.
That's what we want to avoid.
I want to get back down the Bitcoin Ethereum rabbit hole in just a moment, but to finish out the part on inflation, it matters obviously for the prices people pay, right? But it also matters for the psychology of the market and where the market's at. No one wants to see this 8% plus inflation numbers keep coming out or the market's not going to be able to move out. We've got to see inflation start to continue to downtrend. That will give the market some like breath of fresh air, some relief. So if you are thinking about that, that's what we have to see. As long as we get 8-9% inflation, like, you know, the market's just not going to feel comfortable.
Yeah.
We've got to see it consistently come down month after month after month after month.
But so far, it's climbing back up again. So that's...
But commodities have also crashed really bad recently, specifically, obviously, oil.
Right.
So, yeah, we'll see what happens at the pump.
So you think that'll be reflective in the GDP numbers?
That will be reflective in the CPI numbers,
right,
which will be out. Well, the next the problem is this current numbers is back looking, right? So it's looking at June. So these numbers will still be high. It's just a question of, is it record high?
Right.
Next month, I think, is an important one.
Right.
July, the numbers we have right now, because all these commodity prices coming down just start being reflected.
So really what's going on today won't be reflected until like Q3.
More than likely, yeah.
Yeah.
In July numbers, August numbers, September numbers, yeah, Q3. Right. So, you know, we'll see what happens. Let's hope for the best, though, man.
Yeah.
Because we know, Lord knows, the market needs a breath. I'm tired, man.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about retiring. I think I got the rest
on
of this
what,
crash.
On what, Jeremy?
In me.
On silver.
I think I got the rest of this crash in me in part of the next bull market. And then I'm like, man, this crash has been vicious. I think I'm ready to dip after when we're in the next bull market. I'm like, oh, gosh. Because you like everything peaked really in like January, February. That's when technically the market peaked in November, right? And that's when everybody started to actually feel it, and specifically this year, and everybody started paying attention. But a lot of the riskier stocks started to go down in like January, February, 2021. So we've kind of been in this like downtrend really for like a year and a half now. Mm-hmm. It's just everybody else felt it the past 8 months.
Right. What would it take for small caps to come back up? Is it the inflation?
Inflation going down would be a good thing for the overall market. An influx of money starting to come back to the market, which the big money wants to see inflation start to come down, and they want to see the Fed closer to pivoting, which until inflation peaks and, you know, it consistently goes down, the Fed's not going to pivot. They're just going to keep raising rates. And once we get that, then small caps can fly, growth can fly. And you know, it's back to the green days.
Well, also, I don't know if you guys saw the third estimate from the Federal Reserve. They revised their first quarter third estimate because each quarter gets three estimates for the GDP numbers.
Mm.
And so their third estimate actually was revised again. Now we're down 1.6% for the first quarter.
Ooh.
We were originally down 1.4% from the first estimate, down 1.5% second estimate, now 1.6% of the third estimate.
They're prepping us.
Wow. Yeah, they're like,
getting ready.
It's getting a little bit worse.
And that's a good point, Andre. And as the father of three children and as the person that financially supports my family at home, I sometimes think like, what happens if something was to happen to me? And some of you guys might financially support your families as well. And that's where our partner today, Fabric, comes in hand. Fabric helps you with life insurance.
Fabric is built for families to manage their financial future stress-free. You could easily apply for life insurance in as little as 10 minutes where coverage could be offered instantly. Plus, their life insurance policies are issued by Vantage Life, one of the oldest life insurance companies in America, established in 1847. That's almost as old as Jeremy.
Hey, be nice, man. Just because I can't go to the club anymore. Listen, I got a facial. My wife says I look 5 years younger. That's all I'm going to say.
Plus, they have a 4.8 out of 5 excellent rating from Trustpilot, so don't take our word for it. See what other people have to say.
And Graham, I know how cheap you are, so you'd be really happy to learn that they have really affordable plans with $1 million in coverage for less than a dollar a day.
Andre, I'm not that cheap.
Fabric does much more than letting you apply for life insurance. They can also help set up wills, college funds, and savings accounts.
So head to meetfabric.com/mm to get started today.
And with Fabric's 30-day money-back guarantee, there's no risk to apply and you can cancel at any time.
Again, guys, that's meetfabric.com/mm to get started today. And now we should get back to the topic.
We'll see what happens. I mean, no matter what, we're likely probably in a recession right now or very, very, very close to a recession as of right now.
It's so fascinating to see like all the people that have been calling for a recession for the like the last decade. They're like, see, I told you, yeah. I was right. Yeah. And it's like, oh, okay, dude.
The amount of I told you right now, oh, it's so prevalent because it's like, if you're in growth stocks, you've been killed, right?
Yes.
I told you not to be messing with those. If you're in Bitcoin, Ethereum, yeah. I told you those were a Ponzi scheme. It's like, everybody's just so happy that is on that wave to like throw it in your face,
right?
Talk trash about you.
I don't think, like, I've seen a single person who's been, you know, the doom predictor give a specific timeline, like, ever.
No.
I don't think anyone's ever said, like, hey, this is when it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Or this is when the recession's going to hit, between, at least give me like a month range or even a year range.
Yeah.
None of them ever give any ranges.
Part They're of just- it, though, is so much could change like so quickly. It could be true up until the point where something happens outside of your control. Like,
right.
Let's say the Russia-Ukraine invasion. All of a sudden now, you could have been correct if it were not for that one thing that happened, and then it continues forward longer than expected.
Right.
So it's so tough to make any prediction like that.
Yeah, there's so much jealousy out there, I think, from folks that maybe are cash usually or in what's usually seen as safer investments, from those that have been making a lot of money in the growth stocks and Bitcoin, Ethereum, different things like that, where they become very resentful, right? I mean, I was looking at VT, for instance.
Mm.
VT in the past 14 years is only up like 72%,
what is
73%.
VT?
That's like a total stock market
index. VTI.
No, VT.
Oh, sorry.
Which is
VTI
looking
is
at the world.
Version. Got it.
Yeah.
Oh, VT is the world version. Got it. Yes.
Yeah. And so if you've been averaging throughout the years, and let's say you added $100 a month, $1,000 a month, you've hardly made any money,
yeah.
especially when you consider it against the inflation, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's just a lot of jealousy out there.
How much would you make on that?
Not very much, because if you, I took it back as far as you could view it on TradingView, which is 2008. So it was only up 73%. So imagine throughout time you kept averaging every month. You know, you kept dollar cost averaging, buying. I think your average cost would be somewhere between 65 and 75. Somebody calculated the numbers. And then if you take into the account what inflation has done over the past 14 years, you likely would have been in the green, but it would have been like this
right.
much, which is incredible.
Do you know
yeah,
the yield
but that's
on
also
it?
2008. I mean, that's like the peak. That's
no,
near the peak of the market.
That was already crashing. Yeah,
but it crashed in 2008. The market didn't bottom until 2011.
Yeah, but
so you had like 3 years of the beginning investments being in a loss before.
No.
Like, had you started, I think, in 2011.
No,
nope.
I think 2011 is the real estate market.
Yeah, you're yeah. thinking about real estate market.
No,
the
I'm
stock
thinking the
market,
S&P.
Nope.
The S&P dropped
no,
50%.
No, stock market bottomed in
Let's
February
say,
of 2009.
Whip out the phones.
Oh, I'm 100% certain yeah. S&P bottomed in February 2009, okay? I'm 100% certain.
2009, you said?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it was like February,
VT,
maybe
right?
March.
Or the S&P?
The entire market.
Got
everything.
It.
NASDAQ, S&P,
yeah, the
everything.
S&P was 1,400 in January of 2008, and then 2009 was $683.
Yeah, that has nothing to do with the
but,
price of eggs.
2009 was the lowest
yeah.
point.
My point being, it took you all the way until 2013.
That's
early
January.
2013.
TradingView
yeah.
goes back to like summer.
Right.
Of, Jeremy,
but
regardless,
so basically,
Jeremy,
it took,
VT had a low in
five,
March 2009.
Five years.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Right. But it stayed through those lows.
Yeah, so you can do the math.
It took 5 years, basically, for your money to break even on that. Assume, but that's only the original investment. That's not counting.
Yeah. So you think about all the years you're buying when it's obviously much higher than that, right? Because you're going to be
yeah,
buying at much steeper prices. So the
so
fact
you,
is, if
yeah.
you were consistently buying that the past 14 years, you've hardly made any money.
Right.
That's got to hurt over 14
what
years.
What about the dividend?
Jeez.
There's no dividend.
Yeah, there is. 2.4%.
Google stock's not telling me.
Yeah.
Okay. 2.4. Okay. Yeah, that's not
2.5%
crazy.
A year.
Usually when yeah. you ever you got to start worrying about dividends, you know you lost as an investment. It's like, well, what about the dividends?
It's giving a juicy 2.4%.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's an addition. But that's an addition to the
sure.
growth.
Sure.
Yeah, it's not.
I, so
much.
I mean, if I could choose, I would rather just an additional 2.5% versus a dividend.
Yeah.
But all things considered, when you're investing in a basket,
in
you're gonna
fund,
get you're gonna yeah. get dividends. Though.
An index fund that mirrors like the NASDAQ 100 or the S&P 500 would have dominated
right.
VT. You know,
sure.
But that's in hindsight. I mean, you don't know though. There are decades where international outperforms the U.S.
Yeah.
But you don't know. It's like in hindsight, of course. Like, oh, had you gone all in QQQ, you would have made a killing.
Yeah.
But you don't know in the moment.
Yeah, it's not good when it's over a 14-year span though. Short term, you can get caught up in anything, right? You can lose money, you can make
so,
money, but over
so
14
here,
years,
here's what
tough.
I would love to see though, like, so all the people making predictions of like, oh, I told you, you know, the market was going to crash, like their usual advice is like sit it out of the market, wait, right?
Yep.
I would love to see, and I don't know how we'd calculate this, but the opportunity cost of had you sat out of the market for, you know, that amount
yeah.
of time, how long would it take for them to be right?
I know there's been a lot of good studies done on kind of what you're talking about there. Like if you had sat out the market, or even like studies that have been done where this person only buys like when the market's down or something like that. I can't remember, but
They did the three comparisons of people that buy and sell at the perfect times, people that consistently dollar cost average, and people that buy at the perfect low.
Yeah.
And it's the person dollar cost averaging that in the end won.
That's crazy. Mm-hmm. Insane to think about. Yeah.
So yeah, it's and you can't time it, right? Like it's impossible to really get it right. I mean, sure, you might get it right once, but to get it right through decades.
Oh yeah. It's impossible.
That's impossible.
Literally. Yes. 100%.
So, yeah. So Jeremy, what would you say is the alternative? Let's just say we're looking at a 10-year window starting right now for the next 10 years.
Yeah, for the next 10 years, well, one, it depends on if you want to put in the work. If you want to put in the work, I would do 15 to 20 stocks and dollar cost average into those 15 to 20 stocks you love for the next 5-10 years. Keep track of them, listen to conference calls. If you don't want to put in work, then I would always stick with the US and do an index fund. If you don't want, if you don't have any ambition to do the research work, S&P 500 index fund, stick with the US. All these other countries, I'm not saying they're bad, but they're just very unfocused. They just don't have the all the advantages we have in the States of having the dollar, of having a government who backs everything, of having these innovative game-changing companies. We have the dominant companies in the world.
So, yeah, but manufacturing is so much more affordable overseas.
Yeah, but that doesn't
matter. And they got so much potential because they could scale up at a rate that we've already done a lot of growth.
Mm-hmm.
And to catch up to us, they have that momentum right now.
And ladies and gentlemen, we are watching Warren Buffett versus Ray Dalio right now.
No. Yeah. I hardly think Ray Dalio international necessarily.
But what he's saying, what Ray Dalio is echoing what you're saying right now. It's like the U.S. has more of a disadvantage because the U.S. dollar is strong, which is not as good for commerce. Yeah. Whereas you're kind of making the Buffett approach, which is like, just stay in the U.S. That's what he's always been saying.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not saying go all in international. Yeah. I would be perfectly happy having 20% in international, 80% in the U.S.
Okay.
But I think...
So still U.S.
Oh, yeah. No, I would never go like all only international. But I think an 80-20 split, for me at least, like that's what I think is a good middle ground. Because that way you're still getting that exposure that if the U.S. underperforms, which it has in the past, at least you're making it up somewhere else. That's true. You're getting paid a slightly higher dividend in the meantime.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And the other problem is, I mean, you know, you look at what's happened with the Chinese stocks, for instance, right? China's like that one market. You're like, man, if I'm have to bet on somebody outside of the United States, China. And then you look at all the delistings and the talk of the delistings with Alibaba and NIO and all these stocks, right? And that's just like, oh, man, it's so scary. You know, you don't have the same ownership rights. And the way a lot of these Chinese companies, the way they do it is you're basically buying into an entity in like the Cayman Islands or something that is supposed to have ownership of that company. And really, it's like, give me a break. Like, whatever.
It sounds like crypto.
Basically,
holding things offshore.
Well, speaking of crypto, what's going on with crypto, Andre?
Did you guys tell me?
Bring us up to speed.
You know what? Speaking about crypto, I think we should thank our sponsor, FTX. Take it away.
FTX. Wow, that's a great segue. So for those that are not aware, FTX US is a cryptocurrency exchange with fees that are up to 85% lower than the top competitors. They're trusted by millions of users worldwide to buy, sell, track, and trade both crypto and NFTs. They got no minimum fixed fees on withdrawals. They got no ACH fees and no gas fees in the top Ethereum and Solana collections.
I have a question, though. Like, let's say I buy something over $10. Can I get free crypto?
Andre, do you want to answer that one?
I think you got a Dogecoin.
Oh, a Doge.
You got a
Doge. That's right, baby.
Yellow it all in.
So you can get a free coin with every trade over $10.
With every trade over $10, you get a free coin.
That's pretty darn cool. And if you sign up with our link, MMFTX.
Yeah.
Can you get like free crypto if you make a deposit?
Yeah, you could get all the way up to $100 of free crypto depending on how much you trade, how much you deposit.
Yeah, and FTX is trying to get in stocks, which shall be interesting as well. I'm excited to see what progress they make there.
That'll be epic.
Yeah, they've also partnered with Steph Curry, Tom Brady, Coachella, Jeremy.
I was waiting for it.
And Miami Heat Arena.
You can also set up recurring buys, which means you can dollar cost average into the market.
So if you guys are interested, the link is down below to get started with FTX US today. Enjoy and let us know how much crypto you get for free.
Bam. Now back to the depressing part.
So, Andre, I've been going down the Ethereum rabbit hole more and more,
Ethereum
man.
Ethereum rabbit hole?
Yes.
What'd you learn?
Oh, my gosh. It's too much, man. My brain's getting fried. I've probably watched this dang Vitaly Lex Friedman interview like 55 times, man.
Okay.
It's like, I love the top comment on this video. It says, when two AI bots meet. No, it's just, I mean, it's just so much that I'm just like, man, is my brain just not big enough to understand everything going on? Those guys are just on another level.
It's so crazy, man. Jeez. Like, just when you think you understand the technology behind it, it doesn't matter. Like, the market doesn't care about what you understand about the tech.
Mm-hmm.
Because arguably what matters more is how the project is being run and how the asset itself is, like, divested across all these platforms. Because if all these platforms are doing something sketchy where they're loaning money to each other and all these loans on top of loans...
Yeah.
That's when you get the market to collapse. And it doesn't really matter how good the tech is.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what's going on right now.
It is.
Where it's like all these companies are lending more money than they had on hand of all these customer deposits, which means once the asset falls below a certain price, those companies get margin called. And all their friends are like, hey, where's my money? And they're like, I can't pay you back because the money I borrowed is now worth half as much.
Yeah.
So now they default, which means the other company that relied on them defaults as well. And it's like on and on this goes. And it's like this falling dominoes.
Yeah. So, Graham, have you ever watched an interview with Vitalik, the founder of Ethereum?
I've seen interviews. Why?
Okay, you have. I just feel like that guy's on a different level.
Dude,
like,
have you tried to read his papers?
Yeah.
Have you tried to read his
I haven't. No, I have
tried to read his research papers, and in like one sentence, I have to go back and read it again. On my first sentence, I'm like, I don't understand what this says.
Yeah, it's like it's insane. I've never, you know, and obviously I watch interviews on CNBC all day, every day for like, you know, 100 years now, and listen to a lot of very intelligent people. I've never listened to interviews of somebody that just is on such a higher level than I feel like every other person in the world.
Right.
I'm just like he literally makes every CEO, like, I feel like, look stupid. Like, I'm just like, how is that guy that smart, man? It's incredible. Yeah. And, but anyways, or maybe he just does a really bad job of talking human talk.
No, maybe. He is, I think, by many considered to be the smartest person in crypto.
Yeah.
As far as development side. Yeah.
Yeah. Insane, man. Just another level. But anyways, Ethereum rabbit hole is a fun one to go down.
It is. It's never ending. It's like the more you learn, the more you're like, I don't know anything about this. It's like the longer I've been in Bitcoin, the more I'm like, I give up. I think I know, but I don't think I know.
I almost feel like if you're one of the smartest people in the world, you have to go to that space because you feel like those are probably the only people that get you, like, are on your level of like playing field. I just feel like even in the business community, there's just people aren't that smart.
Right.
You know, they might know how to make money, but it's a difference between knowing how to make money and being smart with knowing how to make money and like just on such an intellectual capacity that you're just like crazy.
But even so, like even if you understood the business side of things, even if you understood the tech side of things, the third leg to understand, which I don't think is predictable, is what the customer wants.
Yeah.
It's like, what do people want to actually use? Because Bitcoin was designed to be a currency as well.
Yeah,
but no one's really using it like that yet.
Yeah.
So it's like you can develop all these products, but if the customers are not asking for those solutions, then it's a kind of a moot point.
Yeah, so that's true.
I think it's a big part of crypto. That's one of the problems.
Yeah.
Developing solutions for things that don't need solutions.
Solutions that don't need solutions.
Yeah.
Well,
what it needs is a little bit of regulation.
Regulation.
Just to make sure that these crypto exchanges and lenders and brokers and services aren't just taking advantage of their customers.
Yeah.
And almost everything in the fine print, by the way. I mean, it's really that once you sign up and agree to their terms of service, you are giving them full control over your coins. Mm-hmm. And if anything were to happen to them, you're wiped out.
So do you guys think in any way, shape, or form it's possible that part of this wipeout is kind of like the SEC's way of being like, see, we told you you guys needed us.
It definitely kind of feels like a matter of time.
Right.
You know, and like if you get enough people to lose enough money, essentially, you know, people complain enough and like, oh, we need to see, this is why we need the government to come in. Kind of like you were just talking there, Graham.
Right.
Because it's an ugly situation. And I think you spoke openly about this, Graham. You've, I don't say lost money through Celsius, but you've, you got some money tied up there, right?
Yeah. I mean, in the big picture, I don't really care.
Mm.
I use like five different.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify?
Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Exchanges, okay. And I moved money around all of them, and I've tried almost everything, so it's inevitable that one of those will eventually, something will happen to it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it is what it is.
So you don't care if you all the exchanges went under then?
All of them? No, absolutely, I don't care, but, like, you know, with cryptocurrency, you take a calculated risk.
Yeah.
And for me, I've set that risk between 5 to 8% of my total portfolio.
Okay.
The chance of Bitcoin and Ethereum both worth nothing is almost non-existent. I think it's going to be worth something. So I'm not worried about losing 100%.
Yeah.
Am I worried? I'm not worried about losing, you know, a few percent of that. It's not a big deal.
I like this concept of calculated risk, because I think this is something we need to touch on a lot more just as an investment community, of like that right amount of calculated risk, like you were speaking about here with crypto and having your money in different exchanges, but understanding one of these might go under.
Yeah, but it's also a great example, like why you don't leave your coins on exchanges. I mean, when you do, you take the risk that something could happen to them.
Yeah.
And if you don't want to take that risk, that's fine. But then you move it to a cold storage.
But then you don't earn the interest, correct?
And so what? I mean,
a lot of people like to earn that interest.
It's nothing. I mean, really, like I used BlockFi. I use Celsius. Those are the two. I think there's another one that I used. I try these out. I mean, it's a part of the business of just like you have to try different products and services so you could talk about them openly. And if you like them, great. If you don't like them, so what?
Yeah.
I think calculated risk is super important, but I also think it's so subjective to every person.
It is.
I imagine a person who's a lot wealthier, their risk is, you know, going to be a different kind of an assessment than somebody who is, maybe that's like, you know, all they have is, let's say, $1,000, and they're like, you know what, I'm gonna put $500 into crypto, and if I lose it, whatever, but it could turn into $10,000. And it's like, people with less money tend to take more asymmetric risk. I don't know, I'm not one to say which one is better than the other, but it seems to me like people with more wealth tend to protect it and put less into things like this.
And there were some people that had their life savings in Luna, for instance, the Terra Luna project, and just literally lost their entire life savings, in that project.
Yeah, I think it goes to show that there's nothing that's risk-free.
Yeah,
I mean, there's going to be, if you earn even 1%, there is a small risk of something happening at some point. It's unlikely, but I think you just have to take that into consideration, not forget that there's nothing that comes free.
No. Yeah, 2022, I feel like, is the year, like, I feel like every year represents something in the financial markets. I feel like this is a year that represents remembering the risk you're taking in any investment.
Just now, humility.
Yeah, exactly. And just because we were thinking so much about the reward and, oh, this is the next big opportunity and, oh, I can make so much money in this and this. This is that year that brings the entire community back to thinking about risk management between the crypto exchanges and brokerages that have gone down, between the failed projects, between crypto crashing, between stocks, like some of the biggest companies in the world, PayPal, Netflix falling 60, 70% year to date, Shopify. I think this is that year that represents like, hey, remember the risk we're taking here. This is not risk-free. You can lose money. You can go down 50%, 60%, 70%. Yeah,
this is a casino.
Everything. Let's not forget.
As I will say, as Mike Tyson once said, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face.
Yeah.
But I guess what I'm trying to say here in this case is everyone has a plan or a risk assessment plan until the market explodes. And then you see all these people making all this money and how quickly we forget.
Yes.
Or it's like, oh, yes, I should put all this money into it because everyone's making money.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah, it happens all the time. And, you know, for me, I obviously put, you know, several hundred thousand dollars in Voyager stock, for instance. And I looked at that, and at that time when I was buying that stock, they were growing like crazy. They were growing users. They were growing revenues. They were getting to profitability. And they had their stuff together. They had like 100 million plus in cash, right? And then all of a sudden, fast forward, the hedge fund goes under, and all of a sudden, Voyager's out $600 million. Yeah. And it's like, what?
Right.
What
do you think that's the entire story? I don't know if that's the entire story. It seems like
600 mil is not one, a small amount.
One hedge fund, though, but it seems like a large amount.
If for Voyager, that's a huge amount. I mean,
well, you know, they lent out, I think, $1.2 billion.
Yeah,
roughly.
And from my understanding, they're out over $600 million now. Yeah. Voyager had $100 and something million in cash, roughly, cash and investments. Okay. So if you're out $600 million, like, where do you get the rest of that money? FTX helped, or Sam specifically helped with some money, but that still does not
cover the full way.
Yeah.
But who signs off on that investment that says that's a good idea to invest so much of our money within one company that if something happens to them, our entire business shuts down? Like, who signs off on that? That seems terrible.
Well,
that's how
they were getting the crazy interest. And I know we've all been skeptical of like how these companies were getting this interest. You know, of like paying 5%, 7%, whatever. And now we're getting to see, and the way it was always pitched from like the gentleman that leads that company and other companies was like, oh, it's with big institutions. And sure, it was with a big hedge fund, but then that big hedge fund went under. And let's also not forget, in the last financial crisis, things are a lot crazier than this happened. AIG went under. Now, I know a lot of our audience might be millennials, like they don't understand like how big AIG was. That would be the, I don't even know how you could explain that in the equivalent terms, right? Fannie Mae went under, Freddie Mac went under, right? Lehman Brothers went under, Solomon Brothers went under, like the biggest huge institutions that were seen as like super safe on Wall Street literally went to zero.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, to see kind of what's going on in the crypto space after we saw what happened in the financial crisis, it's crazy what things have happened.
Yeah, like the writing's on the wall, it seems like, and all this thinking where it's like, oh, it's too big to fail is just not true.
Yeah.
That's why I'm worried for people even that have their money on some of the bigger exchanges, like even the Coinbases.
That's what people are talking about now.
Yeah.
That's who's next?
What's the next domino?
Yeah, the Coinbase one seems like just standard disclaimers that it's not SIPC or FDIC insurance. And I think some people forget that.
Right.
So I think that's good that it's out there that, hey, in the event of a bankruptcy, your money is not protected.
Right.
I think that needs to be clarified. And there's got to be some sort of regulation. Instead of FDIC or SIPC, maybe there's like a, you know, CIPC. I don't know. Cryptocurrency insured something or other. I mean, I don't know.
Well, that's my next question. So Jeremy, have you played in the futures market much at all? Like, have you ever invested into like a futures ETF or anything like that?
No.
Okay.
No.
So Gary Gensler, they approved, you know, a way to bet on Bitcoin's future price.
Okay.
Which was BITO. Oh. And then there was, which is an ETF, and then there was a way to bet against Bitcoin's future price, which moves counter to BITO, which is an ETF called BITI.
Oh, wow.
Call it Lil Bitty. Okay, so it moves in the opposite direction of BITO.
Oh, wow.
And so it's fascinating that in and of itself, like that is a derivative. It's what's considered a derivative.
Okay.
It's just a derivative of an asset. It's not the asset itself, like a spot Bitcoin ETF.
It almost feels like a call option on
Bitcoin. It kind of exactly what it is. You're buying contracts.
Mm-hmm.
And so how does it make sense that the SEC approved that, but not a spot Bitcoin ETF? Because
I agree,
that seems to be so much more risky to give people the option to invest into derivatives of such a volatile asset, right?
Yeah.
Wouldn't you want to give people the option to invest in the asset itself rather than like options contracts on it or against it?
Seems like a workaround.
But it's weird. Like that's so much more risky. And their reasoning is they want to protect the consumers. But allowing those futures ETFs to exist doesn't make sense to me if that's the goal of protecting people.
Yeah, that's the first I'm learning of that. That's crazy.
Yeah, that's a little strange.
Yeah, wow. TARC, you guys ever heard about TARC before?
No.
So it's like a 2x leverage of Cathie Wood's ARK ETF. So basically, if let's say ARK Invest, ARK is up 5% a day, this should be up 10% or more that same day. So today, for instance, was a great day, and TARC was up over 18% today.
Jeez.
Jeremy, why didn't you buy that today?
Huh? Imagine trying to day trade that.
So it's an options call or is it ETF? Or?
It's an ETF, a 2X leverage one. Man,
you know what I want to do? So. This might be really stupid, but take $10,000 and every day I'll flip a coin heads or tails. And that decides if I buy or sell that day. Or like which one I do. Like tails, I'll do the short. Heads, I buy the other one.
Yeah, so you
for
could 10 go
days
shark or tarp. Cool.
And just see if I actually make money doing that. Wow. I'll go like 10,000 in, all out.
That's cool.
All in, all out, 10 days.
Jeez, that would be wild.
You sure you're going to make it to 10 days?
Yeah. I'll grow gray hair.
Day two. Yeah. I lost it all.
Why you wouldn't lose it all? But you could lose a significant amount.
Yeah. Yeah.
But my point being, it's just like... playing some of these things, I bet is just like a coin toss.
This is such a gambler, Graham, right? Yeah. Now.
But no, you know what I think it is? It's to prove that no one can predict it. If because like my monkey thing, when the market was going up, like the monkey outperformed everything.
That's right.
So like my point with that was not so much to be like, look how smart the monkey is. It's just like anybody could make money in this market. Like anybody, right. It's not hard. And if a monkey could do it, that should be a little concerning.
Right.
If I do this with a heads or tails, it just goes to show you, it's just like, right. Hey, it's this is random.
It's funny though.
Random stuff.
That saying of like, because some people like to put others down. Like, oh, anybody could make money in this market when the market's going up, right? But those same people, when the market's going down, are like, you're such an idiot. You're so dumb. You're losing all your money. And it's just funny to see that like switch. And like, right. Do you realize the market's going down 30%? Right. So it's just, just once again, it gets back to that whole jealousy thing.
And nowadays, the name of the game is just to compare portfolios and see how much lower someone is or like less low. Like how much money did you lose? 10%? Oh, great.
Yeah.
I'm at 5%. Yeah. I'm doing so much better.
That's it. Oh man, I would kill to be down 5%.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's funny reading Reddit. I read all of this stuff on Reddit. I love it when people say like, I'm panicking right now. I'm down 30%. I put all my money in January and then all the comments are like you said, 30%. I'm down 90%.
Yeah.
I'm 90% down. Yeah.
Graham, the monkey test was with the small caps or was it
that was the S&P 500 and that was 30 randomly picked stocks. And then of those 30, the monkey picked 10.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah, this year, the monkey portfolio is down a lot. I think it's down. Actually, I could look.
It'd be interesting if it was still better than the market. All that matters is beating the market.
Yeah. No, I don't think he's beating the market this year. Right now, the monkey portfolio is down 20%.
Okay. What's the S&P 500?
Oh, so at S&P 500 is like 20%, 20.4% right now.
Okay.
Yeah, 20.12.
So they're neck and neck.
So they are basically tied right now.
And he's doing better than the NASDAQ and the
I remember you did it earlier this year and it was doing better than the S&P 500.
Yeah, so now the original monkey portfolio that was up 40% is now down 20%.
Oh, okay.
So I went from a 40% profit.
That's crazy.
Down. I should have sold it off and just started fresh every year. And I figured, I'm just gonna hold it.
We should have sold everything.
And Jeremy, what were you saying with Warren Buffett?
Yeah, so Warren Buffett. Yeah, I got the numbers here, okay, gentlemen.
All right, what's Warren Buffett doing?
This is for anybody that's not familiar. Basically, you get a dinner with Buffett. It's like 3-4 hours. You have dinner with him. Get to ask him all these questions, pick his mind, and whatnot. So 2013, $1 million it costs. And by the way, he donates some money to charity. 2014, $2.1 million. 2015, $2.3 million. 2016, $3.4 million. 2017 was the year to buy the dip. Only $2.6 million. So it went down. It was cheaper in 17.
Okay.
2018, $3.3 mil. 2019, $4.5 mil. No dinner in 2020. No dinner in 2021 because of Rona.
Mm-hmm.
They just did it recently. Guess how much? If you guys haven't seen the number already.
Oh, sorry, I know the number.
Okay.
I don't know the number. My guess, it's got to be something crazy. I didn't hear about it. I mean, probably it's got to be like a two.
Oh, a two what?
2 million.
2 million?
No.
$19 million this year.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? I bet it's a crypto company, right?
Right? That could be a good point. That would be a great video. I took Warren Buffett out to dinner for $19 million, and all I got was this advice. Buy the S&P 500.
Oh, that would be a video title.
I can't see anything where they were named.
It was the Paul brothers, Jake and Logan. They paid for it. Imagine that.
Can you imagine that? Dude?
Thinking about it, imagine if we split it three ways. Could all three of us go?
No, we couldn't afford it.
I know we couldn't afford it, but let's say hypothetically we could. Could we just pay
on a
like
bad
a
year,
each?
Jeremy? Let's wait until we get to the $2 million mark.
Oh, God.
Just watch it be Ken Griffin.
Kevin, oh my god.
This guy, there's only a handful of people that would do that.
Yeah.
My guess is a crypto company.
Yeah, you've got to have a crazy amount of money. You got to. I feel like you got to pretty much be a billionaire already if it's an individual.
Sam Bankman-Fried would be a good person to do that.
I feel like
that.
It'd be a waste of time.
You don't think so?
Warren Buffett would just be like, I don't care.
Yeah. That's a good impersonation.
I love your impression.
Get out of here, man.
Buffett, what should I do with my Bitcoin?
It's rat poison.
You should have done the entire FTX integration with Warren Buffett's.
But Buffett, have you ever heard of Ethereum before? Ethereum 2.0 and sharding? Do you know anything about sharding, Buffett?
Italic.
Charlie shards all the time.
Oh, we're canceled. We're canceled. We're going to get a notice from Buffett and Munger. Alex, don't fall out of your chair over there. Holy smokes. Awesome. So is that your goal in life, Graham, to have enough money to have dinner with Buffett?
Nah, I don't care.
You don't care?
No.
I know you surprised me because last time I asked you who you want on your channel if it was the last video and you said Floyd Mayweather. That was a surprise.
I gotta throw out a name that no one else is gonna guess. Jeez, you know?
No, but he switched really his mind to Elon after.
No, everyone's gonna say Elon. I mean, so I pick someone else.
Yeah, Floyd, Money Mayweather.
Yeah. Oh. If he's honest, if he's open and honest about his finances, I think he'd be fantastic.
I got investments, New York City. See, in my career, I was smart.
He's like, Ethereum max, buy the dip.
Oh, God. He's like, who's promoting us? Oh, gosh. I remember there was this episode of...
who's the sponsor? Yeah, that one.
That one.
I remember there was this episode of like 24/7 All Access back in the day. He was fighting somebody, I don't know, and they used to do this like... run-up show to get everybody pumped up for the fight, right? And there was like three episodes. And in one of the episodes, he's like leaving this gym. He had got done playing basketball or whatever. And he's like, and one of the guys like, oh, I'm kind of getting tired because it's like 3 a.m. or whatever. And he's like, oh, you need to get a rock star. And then he's like, wait, rock star paying us money? Oh, they're not. Look at them. Get a monster. Wait, monster paying us money? And he's like, no, it's rock star. Oh, I meant that monster. Red Bull, get a rock star. It's just so funny. Like, whoever's paying his money is just, we need to make sure we promote them. Oh gosh.
Yeah, but. No, I do remember he was promoting, I think, Ethereum Max, and I think there's a lawsuit over it.
Oh gosh.
Yeah.
There's so many celebrity ones that always. Yeah, and that in the crypto space, it's a wild, wild west. And how do you guys think they
justify just taking millions of dollars to promote those things? Like, are they not concerned with their brand or like the optics of it?
They probably have lawyers that look over all of it and they say, oh, it's a currency. It's not a security. You're free to say and do this.
And
that's
they just
probably,
don't care.
It's probably what it is.
But like, don't they have, like, they must have like some morality where they're just like, I can't do this. Like, I know legally I'd get away with it, but like, I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Everybody's
different. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Okay. I mean, Floyd came from the family. His dad was locked up in jail for selling drugs and, you know, his mom was an addict. So, you know, just everybody's got different standards. You know, it's like to promote an, even if it's a scam NFT, is like nothing. It's like when you come from selling drugs, it's like.
And I guess if their brand is so massive, that's probably not going to be the thing that takes them.
And his brand is boxing. It's like if a financial person were to do that, their career would be destroyed.
Right.
But a boxer maybe would have a different outcome.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, because people know you as a boxer.
As a boxer, yeah. And then it's like, well, that you had it coming. You listened to a boxer for advice.
Yeah. I mean, there's some of that where it's like, hey, you should have known better.
Right.
Yeah. Oh gosh.
Really?
Yeah. In the NFT community, that's a whole other one because that's the one a lot of the big celebrities have been promoting over the past year. And then now I just read NFT just fell to, I think, a 12-month low terms of sales. Yeah, I was reading an article about that recently.
I never check my portfolio, so I just.
Yeah. Well, I mean, is it even worth it? I mean, for you to
How's the Spider-Man NFT? I remember when you said it was like 40 grand. I'm like, sell it.
It was 100. Yeah,
I would say sell it. How much you pay for it? 15?
No, I paid like 13, 12.
Sell it.
But you do know that if he sells it, he can't get the money.
No, you can now.
Oh, you can now?
Yeah.
What do you mean you can now?
Now you can pull it out.
Well, at the time, you can only convert it back into like gems or whatever that is, but you could not convert gems to cash.
Oh,
you can't. You can't pull it out.
Who invented this?
Oh, so it's 20,000 right now.
20,000.
Yeah. Okay.
That's still above my cost basis.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's good.
It was 100 though, Graham. He's got to wait for 100 again. Yeah.
Okay. It's a Veblen.
No, I'm gonna call a pro. And be like, I'm gonna wait till it's a million.
Oh God. Oh, Doge. Is that still 5 cents?
Yep.
Okay.
It's held steady between 5 and 6 cents. It has not moved in a while.
At some point with some assets, I mean, it's just like, you get all the sellers out of there, right. And it's just like no exactly. one's left.
You shake everyone out.
Yeah. It's like, who's left to sell Doge? Like, if you sold Doge, you probably already sold Doge by right. now.
Probably. Or you lost your password and like you've been waiting this entire time.
Oh, God.
There's a few of them trickling in, I'm sure.
Yeah. That's how you get a bottom in the market. You just run out of sellers. Eventually, you run out of sellers. Yeah. And kind of like the Tattooed Chef.
You know what's funny enough? I checked the price of Tattooed Chef every yeah. day, and it's hovered around the same price. Yeah. I honestly... And any bad news we get in the market, Tattooed Chef is like the exact same.
Yeah.
It, like, it doesn't move anymore. It's just they've yeah. run out of people to
they've
sell
run out of sellers. And that means it's time for you to go heavy, Graham. What
no,
would
no.
A couple hundred... You put a lot more money in riskier things. Come on, 200,000 in the Chef.
No, I wouldn't do
Two,
it. No.
A quarter million.
No. Because I don't need to... I don't want to take the risk on
oh,
something
come
like
on. You invest in coins. Bitcoin, Ethereum.
Yeah, but that to me, the upside is worth the risk. I mean, it's like...
Come you on.
Know? I don't know. Clearly, but like between the two, Tattooed Chef or Bitcoin, Andre, back me up here. I mean, yeah. like
oh, TTCF, clearly.
Come on.
It's so funny to try to see Jeremy convince Dang. Graham and be like, come Dang on, just me. Put in 200 grand. And then we're like, yeah. please, Jeremy, just buy some Bitcoin. Like, just put in. 10.
I told Jeremy just one Bitcoin.
Yeah, we've been trying to tell him that.
Yeah,
since the beginning.
When it was 60,000, guys.
No, we tried at 30.
At 30.
30 was the first time. Yeah. Had you listened to us originally, you'd only be down 30%.
Exactly.
yeah,
which is better than you can say.
Yeah. I'll take 30%. That's not bad. Okay. So how do you feel about margining out now in this sort of market, guys?
Margining out? What?
What do you mean? Are you going to go on margin, Jeremy?
I had some margin,
you
but
did?
I have not done anything on margin in many, many months. It's been a while.
Months?
Yeah.
When's the last time you had margin?
The last time I did some margin...
I feel like we're talking about like some something margin. Taboo here. It's
I
like, Jeremy, like you did margin, Jeremy?
I have a girlfriend. I don't mess with margin.
Because I mean,
I don't
that's
mess
something
with
we can talk about. Let's be honest, okay? You can do like, what is it, 20x leverage in
crypto.
Yeah. You can do like 2x in stocks. So it's really lame in stocks. But I know you guys don't touch these, but how do you feel about other people? Because some people are looking at Bitcoin.
Yeah.
At 20K, let's say, or 19K, and they're like, oh, come on, this has to be bottom. I got to leverage.
I'd stay out at all costs.
Yeah. Stay out
at not,
all.
Never.
I've never understood why anyone in the world would do it, regardless of their wealth.
Mm.
I don't know. But that's Same. More of like just a risk-taking personality, I suppose.
Yes.
It's like, how much risk do you want? I don't understand.
Trying to go really big with it.
I would say put the extra effort into making more money, whether that be just like learning a new skill, changing jobs.
Or actually go have fun and actually go gambling.
Yeah,
I mean, at least you'll get some fun out of it.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, I would say. So when were you in margin?
When
did you do this,
Jeremy?
Months ago. I didn't know about this.
I always carry a little bit of margin around, but it's just a little bit.
Yeah, still, and what, did you pay it off or what?
No, I still got some margin
still
outstanding.
Got margin?
Yeah. The good news is, as long as the market doesn't drop another 30%, I shouldn't get margin called. But I'm going to be in trouble if the market drops another 30%.
So, but at what point would you take out more margin?
I can't do it. I can't do more margin.
You maxed out at your margin?
No. I just literally, I can't take that risk.
Okay. Not that they won't allow you to take out more.
No, because for instance, I
could be like, I can't do it here. We're trying to differentiate. Like,
I could do it in
my personal choice
right
or
now.
Like...
I could margin out the whole public account, right? That's a $1.1 or $1.2 million account.
Wow. Yeah.
So I could margin another million plus easily in that account, but I just can't do it mentally.
They allow
it's
you to
so
double
stressful.
Your portfolio with the money.
Yeah. And you can even go over double technically, even
how?
Though you're not supposed to.
How are you doing that? Because I thought with a lot of the stocks that you have in the public account, they're so volatile that like something like Tesla, you can't margin 1-to-1. They'd give you maybe like what, 60%, 50% on Tesla.
No, so let's say I had 500 shares of Tesla, I would be able to do at least 500 shares
really?
Of margin. Yeah. When I was,
that much?
When I went crazy with margin in 2015, I was doing all the crazy like trades and stuff. At one point I had more money in margin than I had total in my Fidelity.
How do they allow you to do
Sometimes
that?
Sometimes it just sneaks through.
Really?
Yeah.
Is
it's
that
supposed
true?
To be only, you know, for basically every dollar you have in a stock, you're supposed to have another dollar on the other side. But sometimes some things.
You know what it was? Maybe it was I looked into a pledged asset line a while back just to see what I could get. And I think it was, that was through Schwab. But they were, but on index funds, I think it was like up to 60% or something, or 70% as a pledged asset line. I never did it.
Yeah.
People buy like real estate with that kind of stuff with just margin.
Maybe not with margin. Pledged asset line, a little bit more secure. Okay. But you could Yeah.
Yeah.
You could buy real estate with margin, paying off, but yeah.
Well, most people buy real estate on margin. Well, including you, Graham. But you're on margin with
you don't get
real
margin called, though.
No, but you don't get 30-year fixed rate, you know, tax deductible mortgages with margin.
The beautiful thing about real estate is the likelihood that it's going down 50%+ is very, very slim. Right. So, but some people did get wiped out in the last financial crisis.
Famous
that did
last
go crazy.
Yeah, yeah, I know. That very slim. Now it's going to happen.
No,
thanks,
literally, there was, I know. I'm sorry, guys. I'm sorry.
Jinxed it.
Yeah. No, I mean, there were some people in the last financial crisis and that housing crisis that had six houses and then had no houses.
Right.
Like in a matter of months.
They
have no houses.
It happened, man.
Cool story.
10 stocks and now they have no stocks.
Yeah, it happens.
Did it happen to be the middle class?
It feels like a Dr. Seuss book. They had 10 stocks and now they have no stocks. Yeah.
Oh, you want to hear a crazy
story? Three stock.
No
I
stock.
I got a crazy story for you I never told.
What's up?
Okay, so... I don't know if you guys know or not, but in the private stock group, I got a six-figure club award I send to people, or a seven-figure club, okay? So listen to this. It's a crazy story. We've probably sent only 10 six-figure awards, I think, this entire year, and maybe 5 seven-figure this entire year.
Okay.
At the peak, we were sending between 10 and 20 six-figure a week, and five plus usually seven-figure a week.
Whoa.
Guess how much money I spent on six-figure and seven-figure awards from basically the middle of 2020 through the middle of 2021.
Per month or just...
No, just total for that 12-month span.
Not 40 grand. Maybe 20 grand.
Okay, Andre?
Gosh. How many did you send?
Well, I can't tell you.
Oh, you can't tell me?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, now that you asked, I'm going to say 40.
40? Yeah, you're right. 40.
Oh, I said 40 originally.
I know, Andre wins $40,000.
But do you take them away now if the account drops below?
Yeah, that's the running joke. Send them back? Like, so we have to send them back now that we went under?
Funny.
Oh, gosh. But yeah, I mean...
you're getting shipments back.
Yeah. No, it's sad. At every single house, I have awards that are just collecting dust. Like six-figure, seven-figure. At this house, the other house, the other house. It's
do they have like custom names on them or are they just...
No, they're just, you know...
Yeah.
But that just shows you the market we were in.
Yes.
And the market we are in now, where it's like everybody was hitting six-figure, seven-figures.
Well, I'm
figures,
surprised
and now
you're sending
like
anything
no
at
money.
All still, because there's still people hitting those seven-figure marks.
Maybe it was some people that were in some oil and gas stocks.
Right.
Or maybe it was some people that were short in stocks.
But now,
know.
Does that count deposits? Like, let's just say...
Yeah, you could deposit your way to get there. It has to be invested in stocks, so.
Okay. Right.
So you can't just like have 100K cash and like, oh, I want a six-figure. You have to show screenshots of like, investing. You know, that you actually have that money. But it's insane to see like, how much the market like switched, where it's like so many people, and honestly a lot of those people were carried by Tesla. Tesla carried so many people to six-figure and seven-figure club. It was
does that worry you, Jeremy, that that Tesla has seen such a big run for so many people and everybody is kind of like all excited, pumped up about Tesla, that maybe that's not the best
the thing that worries me about Tesla is, you know, I think some people are hopeful it makes another one of those crazy runs like we had in the last one. And I think it's going to be very difficult for it to ever go on some sort of epic 1,000%+ run ever again. If it does, great. I'll be happy for it. I'm a Tesla shareholder. I just think it's going to be incredibly difficult because you're talking about if Tesla's going to do that, they need to become a multi-trillion-dollar market cap. They're going to need to surpass Apple, way past Apple, in order to go there. And it's not impossible. It's just a very... I think difficult thing. It's much more difficult than what they've done in the past. So, I mean, I think a lot of people are also looking for like that next opportunity, but yeah, I mean, when you see something in Bitcoin's the same thing, people think, you know, they invest in Bitcoin. They think they're going to get that same opportunity that you got if you'd been buying in 2015, 2016, and maybe you could. What does everybody talk about with Bitcoin? When's it going to 1 million? And with Tesla, it's like, you know, yeah. So I don't know. We'll see kind of what happens there. I think people are investing a little differently now, though, I will say, in the market. There's some that have left individual stocks and are going only index funds now. You have some folks that are looking for that next big opportunity. But I think most people are risk adverse right now, are very quiet about taking risk right now because it's not cool. Right now, if you talk about taking risk right now, people are like, ask you a million questions. What are you doing that for? What? Yeah. Right now, I think if people are taking risks, they're being really quiet about it. Because no one wants to have to face like a million questions about, you're doing what?
Well, I'm just fascinated by the fact that 10 years ago, more people owned stocks than they do today. That's kind of crazy.
Wait, what?
Yes. Yeah.
Where did you see this?
That's a statistic.
Somewhere.
I'll look it up. I forget. No, it's from the government. From
TikTok?
No, not TikTok. From the government. These are official statistics.
That doesn't even make sense.
More this people make sense to me
own stocks 10 years ago than they do today.
In 2012?
Yes.
Wow.
So people got shaken out of the market. It makes perfect sense. People got shaken out of the market after 2008.
Yeah.
And a lot of people stopped investing as much.
Mm-hmm.
Ever since the launch of Robinhood, which was in 2013, mm-hmm. the amount of people that own stocks started to go up, but very little.
What?
And this year, by 2022, here, I'll pull up the statistics, but give me a
see if you could find it.
Yeah.
What do you see there, Graham? Explain to us.
It says, do you personally or jointly with a spouse have any money invested in the stock market right now, either in individual stocks, stock market mutual, okay, blah, 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 blah.
We'll have to send that screenshot to Alex too.
No. So this goes back all the way to the year 2000.
Right.
So 10 years ago, less people owned stocks 10 years ago than today.
No, true. I'm talking about like 2000. The year 2000.
The year 20 years ago.
Yeah, 20 years ago.
Barely. But I would imagine that to me looks like right before the dot-com bust.
Right.
Where people a lot of people.
Shaken out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is kind of crazy. 20 years ago, you would think like with the advent of Robinhood and free investing,
mm-hmm.
there'd be way more people that own stock now than 20 years ago.
I wonder if crypto would go through that. Imagine if there was somehow less people that own crypto in 20 years.
In 20 years,
that
would be it's wild possible. To think. It's possible. Jeez.
Wow. No, that's intriguing. I bet you the average person has way more in stocks nowadays than back then, though, I would assume. You know,
you mean the wealth is a little more concentrated?
Yes, exactly. Right. Wealth is more concentrated.
Maybe.
So
that's kind of interesting, though. 20 years ago, I would have bet my money on it if I asked anyone, like, who owns more stock? We did 20 years ago or now?
Yeah.
Like, of course. But people get shaken out post 2008.
I bet a lot of those companies went to zero that people were invested in.
Probably,
so they just, you know,
they just wrote it off. Right. Never going to invest in stocks.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate. That's what happens in every single crash market. People just give up, man. They give up, and it happens. It's because you go through the FOMO cycle, and that's what attracts so many people into it, right? That last FOMO cycle you go through, it attracts so many new investors. They all lose money, a lot of money, and then they give up.
Right.
Because they're like, oh, this is a scam. Stocks are a scam. Crypto's a scam. The whole thing's a scam. And I mean, I kind of don't blame them in one way, but at the same time, it just sucks. It's like, buy the dip, damn it.
Right. Just stay with it.
Buy that dip.
Stay with it.
Yeah, stay with it for the long term. Focus on the long
just like
term.
Our channel. Subscribe and stay with us.
Stay with it.
We
please.
Only get better.
With time.
With time.
All right, guys. So with that said, thank you so much for watching. Make sure to subscribe. Stick with us as well. Hit the like button, hit the notification bell, check out the sponsors down below in the description. And now with that said,
thank you.
Yeah.
Take care. Never mind. Smash the like button. Subscribe.
Oh, you know what? Here are the bloopers.
That's right.
Enjoy.
So head to meetfabric.com/mm.
So head to meetfabric.com/mm/mm. Come on. Ready?
I'm a computer nerd. All right.
3, 2, 1. So head to meetfabric.com/mm. Come on, Jeremy.
No, that was Andre that time.
I didn't mess it up.
You said .com before. Or not, okay.
With Chime Secure Credit Card, you can start improving your credit scores with everyday purchases and regular on-time payments. Get started at Chime.com/build.
The Chime Credit Builder Visa Credit Card is issued by Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. Members FDIC. Results may vary. See Chime.com for details. Terms and conditions apply. Go to Chime.com/disclosures for details.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.